Good afternoon. My name is Steve Radini. I'm with Health Resources in Action in Boston. What I wanted to do is spend a few minutes providing you with some stories about some work we've been doing in a particular county, Bexar County in Texas, which is where San Antonio is located. And I'm trying to think how to build on the good things that Lisa and Francine have talked about without being repetitive, but also share some stories at this hour of the day that might help you think about either the work you're currently doing with assessment work or what you'd like to be doing, as well as kind of community health planning. And I guess what I wanted to say is, as we've been thinking about our work over the years, and Lisa and Francine touched upon this in terms of both process and product, I think one of the things that we like to talk about and work with our colleagues on across the country is, from a process piece, is the importance of community engagement across the lifespan. So how do we engage folks? How do we find places for people to be engaged in a process in a meaningful way through dialogues, through a variety of things? But in the same way that we think about this work, I think it's also important to think about it from a capacity building point of view. Our idea, we do so much public health programming, we've been doing that for 50 plus years. We've been doing consulting work for the last dozen years. Our thinking is, what might set us apart from others is that we like to work ourselves out of a job, in a sense that we like to really build the capacity of the local community to engage in the process of doing assessment work and planning work. And ultimately, we get to leave. The reality is that the folks we're working with are the ones that are really being asked or asked to step up to the plate to actually do the work. So the thinking is, as opposed to doing to, we like to think about as doing with. So from the very beginning, we talk about community engagement in a meaningful way. And when we think about this, we talk about the kind of skill building that needs to happen throughout the process. One of the funniest stories I have is when we were doing focus groups, doing an assessment that Lisa mentioned with the Holt Fund, we had a woman who was 95 years old actually running focus groups. And she said to me before it began, she said, "I have nothing to offer at my age." And I'm thinking, my goodness, this woman has everything to offer. And quite honestly, after doing a training of trainers on focus groups and sitting in and watching what she did, she actually could be training us on how to be a good facilitator, because she's an active listener. So as we think about this process, what we want to talk about is the engagement piece, but the capacity building piece. Another piece I think about this whole process are the products. Because what we've learned in our work is that there are going to be some people who are visionary, that want to stay in the clouds at the 30,000 feet, and then there are other people that want to actually have a product done by tomorrow. So we, as facilitators of this process, really need to think about, how do you gauge both the visionaries and the kind of the doers and bring them together and make sure they're all satisfied. So as we think about this work, we need to think about it in terms of products, in terms of what we're able to deliver, in terms of health assessments that look at needs and resources, but also actionable plans. And something we embarked on 2 weeks ago that made myself really nervous is, we actually did strategic planning in a day. That has never happened in my career. It usually takes months. It takes, in one case, it took more than a year to do this, but we actually did strategic planning in three cities in West Texas in a day. Or actually, El Paso, Juarez, Mexico, in Spanish, we did it in a day, and in Las Cruces, New Mexico. And if we went in and did one of those cities in a day, I would have thought, well, maybe, you know, there's something unique about this group of folks. But to actually do this in three cities in three consecutive days, where we actually looked at the data that was provided, came up with a set of priorities that were predetermined based on the data, allowed the group to think about criteria, came up with some selection process in terms of selecting that criteria. We learned that using low-tech stickies was more effective than using the electronic mapping, because people wanted to get up and talk to each other and figure out how they're making decisions. But as a result of that process, we then were able to formulate goals, objectives, and in two of those cities, we were able to actually begin developing strategies. I think if we look back I'd actually say it would probably be nice to do it over 2 days and maybe actually do a day where we could get pretty far along and then about a month or two later actually sit down with folks and actually kind of give them a chance to digest what it is and integrate what they've talked about and thought about and then come back a month or two later and think about this. So in El Paso, in January, we will be going back. We'll be sharing the information in English and in Spanish, and we're actually inviting those three cities to come together because it's a region called the Paso del Norte region. And what's been very exciting about this is to actually engage folks from Juarez, Mexico, Las Cruces, a city, I think it's about 20 or 30,000, maybe 40,000, and then El Paso, which also happens to be a city of close to 1 million people. And what's exciting about this is just having three states and two countries engaged in a community health improvement plan. So what I wanted to do is just share some stories, though, from another example in terms, I guess I need to say I have no relationships to disclose. In Bexar County, just a few things I wanted to talk about. One is that it was a group of women that came together a dozen years ago and said, why are each of us as hospitals doing this kind of work independently? Why are we not doing this collaboratively? And what was really interesting is in our time working with them about a year ago for 12 months, two of these women were still part of the Health Collaborative, which is a nonprofit coalition in the city of San Antonio. And they both have prominent positions in two of the area hospitals. And what was exciting about this is that history of those women coming together to say we need to think about how to do this collaboratively really set the stage for us in terms of coming in as kind of outside consultants and working with this collaboration of both city and county health officers, hospitals and foundations and community-based organizations to do this assessment. Our biggest learning over the years, and what I will do, I'm not going to go through all the slides, but I want to pull out some key findings that I hope might be helpful to you as you think about this work, and then when we have discussion, for you to tell us, you know, I do it this way, or you got it wrong, and here's some other ideas. But when we think about this work, what really became critical about building on the work of that group of women was creating a steering committee, or in this case, an advisory body. And what we have found as we think about this community health assessment work and going back to the idea of engaging community is that you need an advisory body that represents the geographic, the racial, the sector diversity of the community. Because what we have found over the years is that they are the eyes and ears. And these are the leaders that can put you in touch with other individuals and resources to effectively not only do an assessment, but to actually do an effective planning process. So in most of our instances, our advisory bodies are anywhere from 20 to 30 people representing cross sections of the community. Many of them have been getting together in other settings and other meetings, but for this case, what we typically have asked them to do, we don't ask for them to serve a life sentence. We are very clear about saying we would like you to come in for 4 to 5 meetings over the course of the year. So we have a begin date, we have an end date, we talk about a few meetings, and we talk about how many hours. As we have perfected that ask, we're up to about a 95% yes rate. Whereas in the beginning, when a colleague, Ray Considine, and I did this in Framingham, and we asked folks, and we left it open-ended, we had about 50% saying yes. And the learning is if we're going to engage kind of very prominent, important people in various settings, I think you need to talk about with the beginning date, the end date, and what you're asking them to do. So we have found over the years it's really important to have a strong advisory body and be very clear about what their roles and responsibilities are. I also want to, so I don't forget it later, is we've actually mapped this out in phases. So the advisory body that is with you during the assessment process may or may not be the same advisory body that you do the health improvement planning process with. In most cases, it's been a concentric circle where people have felt enough and engaged enough in the assessment piece that other individuals have decided to stay on for the health improvement planning process. And that's what we have been finding in San Antonio. Another piece that we have found is that it's really important to think about a framework for this work. I'd say I'll give you the good, the bad, and the ugly. A few months into the work in San Antonio, we did not have a framework. And as we began to think about what kind of data we needed to gather, what kind of strategies we need to think about, we realized we forgot to think about the social determinants of health. Here we are in public health, and I'm kind of admitting that in front of you all. And the learning was it was really important to go back and make sure we had a framework. Because this framework guided our data gathering. So we weren't just looking at health data. We were looking at data related to employment. We were looking at data related to housing. There were a lot of foreclosures going on in various neighborhoods in San Antonio, so we needed to look at that. We needed to look at agriculture, food production. We needed to look at education. So there are a whole host of things that we needed to think about gathering data on. And so as we thought about this from a social determinants of health model, it makes it much more comprehensive. We're now in a community where a year into a process, they're beginning to embrace the social determinants of health model. When we first raised this, they were like, no way, we're not going down that road. So I think what you need to think about is what your community's ready to take on, where the readiness is, and Lisa and I and some others have been gently nudging the notion of social determinants, and we're glad to say probably, we started in January, here it is October, they're willing to embrace the social determinants of health model. So don't give up. In terms of the health impact pyramid, what we have felt that was really critical about talking to folks about this model, and again, notice we're sharing models, but we're trying to bring it down to what does this mean at the local level. And what we're talking about here is the importance of interventions that are program and service delivery interventions that impact various parts of the population. But obviously, as you go down the model, what we learned in San Antonio is we also needed to be thinking about policy and systems change. So very interestingly enough, when we first started the process and we looked at the assessment that was done a few years previous, a lot of the recommendations were you need this program, you need that program, you need to think about this. All great ideas, but when we think about sustainability and when we think about impact, that may not happen. So we also began to introduce this idea of policy and systems change. And so as you think about this, we began to talk about folks about what does this triangle mean to them? What are they currently doing? And then as you think about program and service delivery, those are okay strategies, but you also need to think about policy systems change work. So in this area, what I just wanted to share real briefly is the methods. And as a former community organizer myself, I think about this from kind of the modus operandi was how do you build a critical mass of support for this work? So how do you build a critical mass? And you build a critical mass by engaging folks. And the way we think about this work is, as a visual learner, it's like dropping a pebble into a pond. And as you see those concentric circles move out, that's how we think about assessment work. So the smaller circle is usually your core group of folks that no matter what, they'll show up for anything. And I say that facetiously, but most people will say there are about 10 people in the community that will come to a meeting and roll up their sleeves and do something for you. I see people laughing, so you've had the same experience. To get beyond that 10 people, you've got to figure out what are the next levels of engagement through this process. So the next circle that we think about is looking at data and figuring out kind of existing data sources. So we go out and talk to some of those folks on the steering committee or the advisory body. We go out and talk to others and begin looking at existing data. Then the next ring is the key informant interviews. We think about who are those formal and informal leaders we need to be talking to and engage them in a process of not only conversation, but identifying other individuals. We then think about the next circle being the focus groups or discussion groups. And in Bexar County, we probably did about 30 key informant interviews and 20 focus groups, both in English and Spanish. Beyond what we learned in San Antonio was moving beyond the focus groups was to actually have community dialogues. So one of the members of the advisory team who ran the neighborhood centers for the city basically made 3 of the neighborhood centers available to us for evening dialogues. And we had anywhere from 75 to 125 people show up at these sessions. And we were actually able to run them in English and Spanish and basically ask people questions. We shared some data and then asked them their thoughts, their perceptions about the data. And so in addition to kind of doing key informant interviews and focus groups, we were also able to do these dialogue sessions. What was also exciting about this, because when you get up to 125 people, we were actually running anywhere from 8 to 10 discussion groups. So many of the members of the advisory body were actually table facilitators and conducting these discussions both in English and in Spanish where we could do that. And we also engaged not only adults, but we engaged elders and young people in this process so that everyone is owning into the process. Ultimately, at the end, the final circle in this was a large community meeting where we actually had the mayor of San Antonio present the data with us in terms of what we found. And then what was really exciting about that, he's an energetic guy. He's got a vision for San Antonio 2020, and it really fit right into kind of the work that he was doing or is doing. I don't know if I'll get into all the social and economic pieces of the context of San Antonio, but it is important that we've got 40% of the population that was speaking Spanish. So anything that we did had to also be available in Spanish. In Boston, when we did one of these assessments, people don't think of Boston as a language-diverse community, but we actually ran a series of discussion groups one night. We did them in English, Portuguese, Spanish, Haitian Creole, and Somali. To engage the community. And we had people running those groups that looked like the people we were talking to as well. The key issues that emerged, I want to put these up here because I want to show you kind of how things have evolved into the CHIP. But here were the issues that emerged. And quite honestly, in most of the communities where we're working, these are the key issues. Overweight, obesity, diabetes, physical activity, chronic disease, teen pregnancy, violence, and mental health. So look at it from kind of the needs-based. And hold that thought. We also had visuals that we shared with folks. What's really interesting about San Antonio is we partnered with a group called See Now. So all of this information is up online. All the community meetings we had were up online so that there's a dialogue that's still happening. We also, in this partnership, we were able to create kind of mapping processes that basically show you, in this case, no regular physical activity by sector. You see, I think it's I-20, but you see something cutting across San Antonio or the county, and below that line are where the higher rates of no physical activity. No surprise, when you go to overweight and obesity, same kind of things. If you know San Antonio, the east side is African American, the southwest side is predominantly Mexican American, and that green is also Mexican American, but it's a little bit more affluent than the south side. The Anglos primarily concentrate in that area in the dark blue. And then if you look at very satisfied with life, what was really interesting here is the head of the health department was saying, out of the 70 zip codes in our county, there are 10 that we need to work on. So it was the 10-70 mix. And he said if we began to educate folks about these 10 zip codes and what was going on there, we could be more effective with our resources, whether it's around programming or policy systems change work. What we've also done through this work is collected community voices. And one I wanted to share with you was from this woman that said, I would like to walk in my neighborhood. This was in the African American community. However, there are no sidewalks, there are broken streetlights and roaming dogs. What was really interesting is, quite honestly, and I'm sure many of you have gathered this information, what we're finding is as we talked to some folks, some people were very PC or politically correct. Others were saying, well, that's an issue for that community or that population. But when you started talking to folks in these communities or those people, they were saying, yes, they'd like to do this. However, we don't have sidewalks, we don't have streetlights, and we've got roaming rabid dogs. I'm from Boston. I didn't know there were roaming rabid dogs, but most of the cities we've been in Texas, this is an issue. We saw it in El Paso a few weeks ago. We saw it in San Antonio. So this is preventing people from getting out and being physically active. There's another quote that I don't have here, but just recently came up, where a woman said, I would love to exercise if I had access to a car. Isn't that interesting? Think about it for a second. Talk about the absurdity of that. And yet what she's basically saying is there's no place in her neighborhood to be physically active. And because she doesn't have a car, it prevents her from being physically active. So many of us, we do this work. We feel it's important to make sure we put the community context out in front of the data. Because as we think about strategy development, you need to know community context. So thinking about the strengths and assets of the community, we saw a strong sense of community and family, cultural diversity, resources around the faith community, neighborhood associations, Promotora doing amazing work on little resources. One quote that came out was, we are part of a family and the communities are family. The key themes is that data on behavioral and disease distribution consistently follow social and economic patterns. Health equity is an important lens to be thinking about this work. Communities are very much, or neighborhoods in this county are very much rich in resources. Obesity, diabetes, physical activity, nutrition were kind of top of the mind health issues. Coordination and collaboration are really important to maximize resources. Programs and services and policy need to be culturally appropriate, culturally sensitive. We need to also think about increasing awareness of existing programs and services. We heard this over and over again. And it's important for health programs and services to address people's daily lives. So real quickly, I just want to talk briefly about, as a result of that process and thanking folks back in February for doing a wonderful job, we gave people a month off. And then we came back again a month later and went back to those original steering committee members and said, do you want to go on to round two? And we had probably about 80% going on to round two. People were saying, I want to stay connected, I just don't have the time. So it also encouraged us or allowed us to go out and find other people to engage in the planning process. And what was exciting about this is that we've engaged people from Parks and Recreation, we've engaged people from the Mayor's Policy Office, Economic Development, we've got a few funders at the table, local community foundations who were not at the table before. So it's an opportunity to kind of think about the group that you're working with, and through this process is recognize that it's going to evolve. Don't take it as an ego thing. If people drop out, the best thing to do is find out why they're dropping out and how to keep them engaged, and also find meaningful levels of engagement. So for this process, we actually decided we needed to come up with core values for this process. And I just wanted to share with you some of the values that this group has worked on. And some of those values and operating principles are that as we go through this CHIP, this health improvement planning process, we need to think about community inclusion and community stories. We call it the braid, or one woman called it the braid, in terms of thinking about how do we get out of the silos and think about integrating efforts. Transformation came up, and not in a non-meaningful way. This was really about if we're really committed to changing the kind of community structure that currently exists, we need to think about capacity building, we need to think about leadership opportunities, we need to think about transformation. We also talked about innovation, not only evidence-based, but local innovation, and had long conversations about that. Creating and constructing dialogue, results-oriented, and then equity and integration, which I briefly talked about. As we have gone through this process, we've looked at the data that we gathered through our CHIP, but we also looked at what the mayor gathered through his work. We looked at what the county health department gathered. We looked at what the city health department gathered. We looked at BRFSS data. We looked at YRBS data. And interestingly enough, we put it all on one page. So on one axis, we had all the different health issues. On the other was the data source, and we just mapped it. We had someone map it. And it pretty much came out in terms of, I'll show you in a second what it came out, but it was pretty clear what came out. And then we gave people a chance, as we began to think about developing a vision and goals, we gave people a chance to look at what came up, what the data was showing us at a meta level, and then gave them a chance to select kind of the five top priorities, again, using some criteria and a process. We are now in the process of forming work groups and thinking about doing, we have some goal statements, we're looking at a process of developing objectives and strategies, and we're getting back out into the neighborhood centers to do this. But interestingly enough, this is what I wanted to share. So the data that I shared with you before in terms of need, this is what's come up as a vision moving forward. It's a healthy communities approach, thinking about it from a systemic change piece, and what we're talking about is healthy eating, active living, healthy child and family development, community safety, health and well-being. In our last meeting 2 weeks ago, we decided to incorporate mental and behavioral health, and then healthy sexuality, not just for women. We went from teen pregnancy to thinking about healthy sexuality and looking at how we're talking about men and women and engaging men and women in this conversation. And then the final thing, I think, in terms of just conclusions, and then we'll open it up, is that throughout this process, it's critical to engage multi-sector partners. It's really important to think about utilizing not only a participatory approach, but engaging community members and building capacity at a variety of levels, to connect to existing resources, So as we, the piece I forgot to mention, as we think about those five groups we're working on in San Antonio, there are probably five different task forces running already in the county. I could tell you there are, because we have that list. And instead of those groups kind of coming up with their own goals and objectives, we're reaching out to each of those task forces to be part of this group for a planning process so that we don't have multiple planning processes, but we're looking at the synergy across different efforts going on in the county. It's important to recognize the larger social and economic context, and as both Lisa and Francine have talked about, in addition to the product, you really need to pay attention to the process. So thank you very much.